Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome everyone. Chuck Bonnerville, Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, Truth Straight Up, brought to you by...
Yeah, the show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, along with happytrees.co. So today we will get to, in the second half of the show, Chuck spent the weekend, well, you spent the weekend doing a lot of things. You actually played golf twice for tournament practices, though, tournament purposes. But he, listening to the Tucker Carlson interviews with the presidential candidates, we'll take a look at all of that. Denver has a new mayor effective today. The new Fox lineup starts effective today. I don't hold that much hope for that, but wanted to start off.
I don't hold much hope for either of those last two events.
Well, yeah, really. But wanted to start off with Dr. Brian Jundep. Had a great column up in American Thinker. Is the 2024 election the last gasp for America? Hey, Brian, welcome and thanks once again for your
Brian.
Time.
Hey, cool. Guys, how are you?
We're
you
good.
Hear me?
You
okay.
Doing?
Good.
So, you know, when I read that, I'm like, this is exactly what Chuck and I have been talking about. Like, basically, is there hope? When I walk the dog in the morning, I always pass this couple walking, and they're strong Trump supporters. And they frequently ask me, is there any hope? And like, I don't want to be downers on their morning walk, you know, but sometimes I feel like saying, no, you know, there's not any hope.
But, well, Brian had a prior article to that, which it just explained, you know, how they're going to rig the 2024 election anyway. You expect them to stop from doing all the hideous things they did, and they're not.
The two are connected, basically.
Absolutely. If the vote's not legitimate and it's rigged, then, you know, doesn't matter. And there are signs of that. Biden's not campaigning. He has no campaign headquarters. He hasn't hired anybody. He's just assuming he's going to be reelected. And in his mind, that's probably a safe assumption. He's,
you know,
got
I
his 81
bad.
Million votes already. And, you know, Fox News will call the election sometime in October and it'll all be done.
There we go. Or, as you pointed out, there'll be a health crisis. So we'll do a Zelensky and we'll just skip the elections altogether, right?
Well, that could be, too. There's, you know, threat of nuclear war and the next pandemic, which is Bill Gates and Fauci and everybody are brewing up. And who knows what kind of false flag. And yeah, it's unsafe to hold an election.
Right.
But on the other hand, Trump is awfully confident. You know, he's no dummy. And whatever he assumed or didn't assume about the deep state the first time around, he's quite aware. He knows what happened. And if he hasn't done anything or made any arrangements to fix this, well, that's on him.
Yeah,
fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Yeah, well, he goes down, we all go down. I mean, Carrie Lake was highly confident she'd won the election, even over the weekend. And then they finished
her
off.
Lo and behold.
You know, one thing about American elections, which people don't really appreciate, at least starting in 1865, if not well before that, all the Democrats have done is cheat. I mean, you know, half the country was Republican and half the country... Well, with cheating with Democrats. So from 1876 on, you had the Jim Crow South. All those 13 states or 11 states, I guess, of the Confederacy were all rigged because they didn't allow black people to vote. And the Republicans did nothing about it. And blacks then were voting Republican. In the big cities, New York, you had Tammany Hall. In Kansas City, you had the Pendergast Gang. In Chicago, you had a machine. Boston, you had a machine. They've been cheating on elections for over 100 years. And Republicans have done nothing about it. They just act as if, and they won often enough that they made no effort. Only when blacks started to vote Democratic, did the Democrats, well, hell, we're not going to have a rigged system with just white people voting, and they changed it. But for over 100 years, they've cheated. That's how they've gotten their majorities, the vast majority of the time. And Republicans have done zero about that all those years. And they're going to do zero about it again.
Well, Republicans, I don't think they care whether they're in the majority or the minority. I think a lot of them are happier being in the minority. They can fuss and complain and fundraise and not have to actually do anything or take a stand. And the Republican establishment, certainly the donor class, they don't care who wins. They just want to make sure it's not Trump and it's not RFK Jr. So right, they're, the entire donor class is going to be out to sabotage those two.
Right.
Look at all the corporate money behind Ron DeSantis. And he, you know, had $100 million war chest after his gubernatorial reelection. He didn't need all that money, but he got it. And that was in preparation for a run for president. This has all been preordained that he was going to be the next golden boy, you know, Jeb or the Bushes or whatever. And this is the donor class doesn't care who's in the White House because they control members of Congress. There was a James O'Keefe undercover video of some BlackRock guy. He said, hey, you can buy a senator for 10 grand. So the donor class has bought all the representatives. So they're getting their way, regardless of who or which party is in the White House.
I'm not sure they're getting their way with DeSantis, which is why they may have to jump horses and decide that Glenn Youngkin was.
Well, getting their way, he's not doing well. That's right. His biggest problem. He's down 20 points in his own state where he's supposedly
I don't think they can save him with all their money and all their shenanigans.
No, that's another issue, but that was their early. Well, it's like Jeb. Jeb had, you know, a few $100 million and he got three delegates out of it. He was a bad candidate.
The elections, I remember it was back in, a couple of election cycles ago, was it 2016? Susan Beckman, who was running a legislator, who was running for the Colorado State Legislature down in Arapahoe County, had won before. The county itself demographically hadn't changed at all. And she was way ahead. And then, I mean, and she talked about this a lot, trying to wake up the Colorado Republican Party under previous leadership. And she said, then all of a sudden, they watched these massive ballot dumps coming in on election that the Democrats had hoarded, right? And she narrowly won. And at that point, she said, you know, the Democrats have a system which they have since refined in Colorado and expanded to other states. And she said they could elect a dog. She said the candidate doesn't even matter in elections anymore. I mean, you know, then you fast forward, you've got the motor voter laws. You've got now we're seeing, the U.S. Postal Service is involved apparently in taking the undeliverable ballots and giving them to Democrats. There's so many tentacles as that thousand mules. You know, I don't know how I agree with you. Hopefully Trump has an answer, but sometimes I become kind of hopeless because you think what could it be? Right. They have all these ballots on hand and who knows how many they just are going to, you know, keep and until they see how many they need.
Trump
knows what happened to him. And if he lets it happen again, that's on him.
Yeah.
And it's on us because
this,
well, you know, I mean, the same thing would happen if it was DeSantis or Vivek or whoever was the nominee. Take your pick. Why are they going to reserve that for Trump?
Well,
maybe DeSantis, they'd let him win if he's controlled. If he's going to be a puppet of the donor class, then they'd be happy
the
to
Democrats,
have him and just get rid
Democrats
of Biden and get DeSantis in there, and he'll push for endless wars, open borders, and, you know, same as the Bushes did.
Right.
They're happy with that.
When you talk about the donor class, too, I think you have a really good point there. I hadn't even thought of that, the World Economic Forum people. I mean, some of them I don't think care that much about the woke stuff that DeSantis is campaigning on. As long as he keeps us at war at Ukraine, right, as long as he keeps borders open and things like that, you know, they're willing to let some of these other issues ride a little bit.
Although they may give him the border. They've already got 7 million in. You know, maybe that's enough for a little while. As long as
the woke stuff is... the woke stuff's a distraction. That's a fad, and it'll get old soon. But it's a distraction from the fact that we're fighting World War III as a proxy war, and it's not getting better; it's getting worse. We just blew up the Crimea Bridge, and Russia canceled their grain deal, and of course they're going to retaliate against this. This is they're really playing with fire, and this has been long planned, but it's going to backfire. Meanwhile, the U.S. economy is tanking. We've got open borders. We've got a lot of big problems.
And let's talk about, you know, when you say the last
athletes are a distraction.
Right. And, you know, exactly. And you talk about the last gasp. And Sandra's asking, how do we fight it? We'll get to that in a second, because I think we all have some ideas. But I was reading a thing, some major food producer, you know, like who supply the grocery stores, say what they're seeing, which is particularly alarming, is people are buying less at the grocery store of staples kinds of things, right? It's not that people, for a while now, people have been buying the cheaper brands, and now they're buying just less of stuff. And, you know, and they're like, as you said, I mean, you go to the grocery store now, it's just, you know, the prices and what they're doing to the economy, just on that really, you know, granular level there is atrocious.
Well, people can't afford it. It used to, the joke was, Whole Foods was whole paycheck. Now it's King Soopers. I go to King Soopers and buy a few things, and it's, you know, $50, $70. And I have, you know, a little handheld cart with a few items in it, and it's at least $50. That's nuts.
Right.
So imagine a grocery cart full to the rim. You're talking, you know, mortgage payment.
Right. Right.
Bill for your groceries. And people can't afford that. So they're buying less. They're buying cheaper. The stuff they don't really need. Not buying it.
What?
Let's go in. You know, Trump let it go in 2020. And when you really think about it, Trump could have done all he wanted to, and nothing would have happened. Bill Barr was not going to put boots on the ground to prevent election fraud. Nope. Esper, Secretary of Defense, wasn't going to do anything. Whoever was the head of cybersecurity, who said the election was great. Trump could do all he wanted in his White House. He had no possibility of stopping them. I mean, they could have brought lawsuits and Democrat ones, and they probably should have. But, you know, the judges just threw those out anyway. And now he controls nothing. I mean, if you know, one of the things, you know, I've said in my kind of eternal shame, I'll have to report to God for this, that, you know, I started ballot harvesting in Colorado. Back in 2001, and
in Glendale,
and in a couple other cities, all legal, nothing illegal. I could have done the illegal stuff. I didn't have to, because if you do the ballot harvesting, all the work it takes for ballot harvesting, incredible amount of work, and the other side doesn't do ballot harvesting, they're going to lose. So they're just guaranteed to lose. And so now I've got people coming, well, how do we ballot harvest? And I hate to tell them what the incredible amount of work over 2 years, really, to do ballot harvesting. And they still won't be as good as the Democrats, but at least they'll have a fair chance of possibly ever winning an election. But the amount, you know, you've got to get every voter. You got to find out if he's voted or not. You have to change the whole culture. When somebody says, have you, you know, turned in your ballot yet? And you go, I like to vote. And you kind of go, that's not an acceptable answer, because you really can't get out the vote unless you know who hasn't voted and who's not going to vote. But the amount of effort and cost and yes, they can do it because they have the teacher unions. Those are great ballot harvesters. They have entire unions, the public employees unions.
Well, they have all the dark money organizations, too. You got Mark Zuckerberg, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got all of those.
Oh, sure. You've got Soros. You've got big tech. Everything's allied against them. Big finance, big pharma, big tech. Look at big tech rigging the election and how they worked with the government and suppressed negative stories and promoted good stories.
And if you look at big pharma, they in their own way rigged the election by, you know, conning us with the COVID thing. So they'll be back.
And I think, so that's where I do get, I mean, it's going to be hard. I mean, because now in places like Colorado, you have the motor voter law where you're automatic. You may not even be a person, right? I mean, who lives in Colorado, thousands and thousands of ballots go out. They're not delivered. What the Democrats have perfected is collecting those and doing.
Yeah, they collect them from the post office and they get voted and turned in. They don't match signatures and it's.
Right. And they've made all of that. Well, all of the election protection stuff, you know, like you said, matching signatures, things like that, they made, it's meaningless anymore. So the thing is what they're doing is it's legal. And I kind of think it's, I don't know, the trouble goes back to, I think, like you said, the donors, the big time, these things cost money. Like, you know, we got, you know, Adams County Republican Party is sending out emails saying, oh, we're going to do phone bank calling for candidates. It's like, great. Do you know what I mean? But what we really need to do
is
pay people. Yeah. To go knock on doors. As the Republicans, they do that. And yet on the other hand, they have no money. So what are they going to do? And like you said, the donors, you know, there's no George Soros on the Republican side. The donors are like you said,
well, George Soros is on the Republican side in the form of Phil Anschutz. I mean, yeah. If you read Conservative Treehouse, and I think a lot of people do, I assume you do too.
Yep.
You know, he talks about the Sea Island billionaires. Well, who owned the Sea Island resort they all met at and determined who they're going to do? It was Phil Anschutz. He owns that resort. He bought it all, lock, stock, and barrel. And so you have the biggest contributor to the Republican cause, quote unquote, in Colorado. But he's part of those Sea Island billionaires.
Well, because they want to pick their candidate that's controllable and is going to do their bidding. They really don't care what party. They just want somebody that pushes globalism and interests of the big business so they can get wealthier and screw everybody else.
That's the rest of us. Well, talk about, though, what I also liked in your column, because it is very difficult. And as you said, this could well be the last gasp, because if they perfect this in this election, it will be, I think, extremely hard for a Republican to win like a presidential race. And the Senate is worthless. They don't
if they control the House and Congress, you'll see big changes. The Supreme Court will be stacked, and there goes the First Amendment and Second Amendment as we know it, and a lot of other things.
Right. Well, yeah, I think that'll be a big push they do, that all of a sudden free speech, not if it's dangerous, right? Like we got kicked off of YouTube because we were dangerous. Our misinformation was dangerous, even though it was absolutely accurate. I mean, they're going to use that. But I like what, though, you threw in, but you just can't give up, right? You quoted, from the Braveheart movie, where it's like, look, yes, you may fight and you may die, but would you trade all of the days in between for fighting for freedom? I mean, I just think, even though it seems hopeless, you know, but you can't give up. You still have to do
what is
the
quote? Why don't you give us a full quote, Julie?
I don't have it. Brian, do you have it memorized?
I don't have it in front of me. No, I don't have it memorized.
They're like, freedom. And then they mooned everybody. No, so maybe that's what we need to do. All of the surveillance cameras on all of the ballot boxes. We all, the Republicans, just need to go there and moon them or something like that.
Well, one thing we can fight back is through ridicule. The Alinsky rule is to pick your enemy and polarize it, and the counter of that is ridicule, and we're seeing a lot of that now. Twitter allows it, whereas before, if you ridiculed, you'd get banned.
Right.
So one platform at least. And you look at Tucker Carlson and his recent interviews, which I guess you're going to talk about later.
Right.
But, I mean, he's ridiculing the people that are pro-Ukraine, pro-this, pro-that, of just a thoughtful analysis. It's not being pro-Russia. It's just being, hey, you guys are silly and your ideas make no sense. And
look at what happened to
Mike Pence. I mean, it was...
Yeah.
No, he just ended his future political career.
Right. Well, and you're right. I think, and sometimes, I mean, like I said, you do what you can. And the left has no sense of humor. And they hate it when you ridicule them. Right. I mean, they get all upset when you find things funny. Or like you said, when you kind of make fun of them, that's why they want people banned. There was somebody had posted a thing, Elon Musk posted it, where they were talking about, you know, something that was bad about fish. You know, you shouldn't eat fish. Fish are living things. Right. And then somebody else, it was a PETA post. And then somebody said, well, fish eat other fish. So should they be banned? And then what PETA did was block that person.
Exactly. But yes, that exchange will go around. People will see it. It just makes them look foolish. And, you know, the fact checking now. Biden's been fact checked and Democrats have been fact checked on Twitter. And they have community notes or whatever they call it.
Right.
As a form of fact checking and pointing out that, hey, these guys are wrong.
Right. And, well, they're idiots.
previous Twitter, that would have never happened. You speak out and you get a warning or you get banned.
Yeah.
Well, I've watched political debates beginning in 1960.
I was 2 years old then, so I didn't watch
them. Well, I wasn't born yet, but I was watching.
Yeah.
Tucker Carlson, in his interviews of the six candidates, illuminated more of who those candidates were than every debate I've seen in you know, the 60 years since, or wherever it's been, more than that, 63. And he just unbound people with not that much effort. I mean, you know, Pence, he exposed Asa Hutchinson, he exposed Scott, he exposed all of the four of them, and with really, as you said, kind of humor, and he wasn't mean, he wasn't combative,
wasn't gotcha. Anything.
But he, you know, if you were thinking before that Tim Scott might be okay, and I never particularly like Tim Scott, but you know, left out, he was a buffoon, and he just you know showed he's a buffoon. Asa Hutchinson, you know, he just was a phony and a fraud, and Mike Pence, for all the things he's done to us, including certifying the 2020 election, God, was that just desserts to watch him. And then have Tucker the following day go down to Florida to the Turning Point one and just mock how he destroyed him.
I mean, yeah.
No, that was great. And you're right about the debates. The debates are a chance for the moderators to get the leading Republican candidate, like they did to Trump, and get sound bites for the evening news. That's all they want. There's no thoughtful discussion. Tucker was very good. It was a one-on-one with some good questions. And if it was a debate and he was the moderator and asked these questions and they'd each get 5 minutes to answer, that's fine. But this forum was great. A lot of people learned about who these candidates are and who the phonies are and who doesn't stand for anything or who's just plain dumb, who hasn't thought about these issues. They just parrot the party talking points. Yeah, Ukraine. Well, there's a little more to it than that.
And I think what was good about it was, and, you know, we forget, it's like we're in this abusive relationship with politicians and the media. I mean, what Tucker Carlson did, I mean, was nothing all that extraordinary, except for it hasn't been done by journalists in like a decade or so, right? He just asked, and he had done his homework, so he had the information on hand. He wasn't playing gotcha. He was just asking him questions so he could not let Asa Hutchinson weasel around stuff, right? And Mike Pence, Tucker was just asking legitimate questions about Ukraine, and we've gotten so used to not hearing that, and politicians, I think, have gotten so used to not being asked those kind of questions that they were like, what? Do you know what I mean?
Or successfully not answering the question, although DeSantis really did that. But you know, politics, you know, one of the things in politics, you don't have to answer the question they give you. You can give the answer you want, except Tarko.
Well, Nikki Haley did that. You know, when asked the question, she was answering the questions that were not asked.
Right.
But that comes across, though.
It does expose that. Mm-hmm. Right. It sure does. And that then those who are too afraid to show up, like Chris Christie.
Yeah.
he's simply a foil for Trump, and his donor class is pumping millions into his campaign so he can say mean things about Trump, and he's not going to go anywhere, but he'll walk away with a campaign war chest of $5 million that he can use to fund his sitting on the beach.
Yeah,
buy him a beach.
We'll see. He can sit with Joe on the beach. We'll see what happens too with the debates, right? So you've got Brett Baer with Fox coming up for the debate, and that'll be kind of interesting to see what they do. Is there some other audio there? Anyway, to see what they do with that. In terms of if you're Brett Baer, do you try to do it like Tucker Carlson and ask legitimate questions, or do you just go ahead and do your pat like you said? If you're Brett Baer, you try to make yourself look good always.
Well, they try to. I'm just going to move because it's noisy where I am.
Okay.
They try to make themselves look good. That's right. That's really what it's about. I don't trust Brett Baer. You know, he hates Trump, and He's going to be the Chris Wallace of this election cycle.
Yes. Right.
Is Trump even going to appear at the debates?
I wouldn't if I was
far and away the front runner. What's in it for him?
Right.
He's going to have everybody ganging up on him and trying to
including the moderators
trip him up. Yeah.
Exactly. So
he has nothing to gain and everything to lose.
Well, and
he's not going to gain new supporters, put it that way.
No, and I was saying to Chuck, plus it would be stupid from his point of view. If he's there, everyone will watch it, right? So some of these other people will get airtime. And I mean, so just as a campaign strategy, why would you want to do that? But if he doesn't show up, I think no one will watch it. Why would you want to watch a bunch of people polling at like 14% or lower who have no chance to even do it? And I think at what point?
And moreover, there's always a part two to the debates where you have all the talking heads talk about how the debate went.
If you have it on
Fox or something else, I don't care how Trump did. They all say he was awful. Ron DeSantis made the greatest move ever. I mean, why would you want to subject yourself not only to everybody attacking you, including the moderator, but the post-debate BS?
I haven't watched any television or cable news since Tucker got fired. I don't miss it one bit. And I'm actually getting rid of my cable and just get an Amazon Fire Stick so I can watch Netflix and a few other things. But I don't bother with corporate media. It's a waste of time.
Well, I mean, it's going bad. Peter Boyle was at the newspaper doing his column today, and he noted it. And actually, I looked and it went down even further. Salem stock yesterday was at 91 cents. Per share. It's now at 89 cents, down from in the heyday, like $40 or something. Yeah. So you and it's not just Salem. I mean, it's just that I was reading a thing today that all of the sports companies, that broadcast, like the Rockies and things like that, are scrambling because no one's there. Meanwhile, Hollywood decides to go on strike. So like, okay, go ahead, because it's like
People are finding other ways to get their news. Rush Limbaugh was a stalwart, but he's no longer around, and there's nobody like him. Now you have podcasts, and you got Tucker and his deal, and Joe Rogan does great interviews, and there are a lot of other ways you can get good information rather than watching, Laura Ingraham or Hannity. It's repetitive
are
stuff.
Are you talking about the powerful
new lineup, Brian? Powerful
today?
New lineup.
Today is
seen the promo where they kind of walk in and then I had to do this when I was in TV too. You walk, and then you look up like that meaningfully. You're about to say something
the ratings are half what they were. And, talk radio, you got half the people hate Trump and just want to bash on him. And, it's like, it's not interesting. It's they're much, much more fruitful ways of spending one's time to get information, get news, get perspective. And it's unfortunately, I think talk radio is dying in large part because they're not fulfilling the need.
They're too worried about advertisers and corporate stuff.
Preaching to their small choir, and people aren't interested in that, so they don't watch or listen.
Right.
Well, they don't even have a small choir. The Media Matters has been one of the most successful campaigns ever of getting any kind of controversial talk radio disbarred, including us. I mean,
That's what we have, the Chuck and Julie Show and Brian Junedep on American Thinker.
That's right. So. That's right. You do your podcasts and people come here, they'll learn more than in 30 minutes than watching an evening at Fox News or, a morning at one of the talk shows. So talk stations.
Well, so let me ask you sort of final question before we let you go.
Sure.
Like I said, is the 2024 election the last gasp for America? I kind of worry that it is. Do you, I don't know, 2025, what do you see? Or what do you, let me ask you this. What do you hope and what do you think? Are they the same?
Well, the hope is that Trump gets reelected, and knowing what he knows now compared to what he knew 8 years ago actually drains the swamp. That's a tall order, but that's my hope. My fear is that he or whoever the Republican nominee is, they lose. The Democrats control the House and Senate. They add four more Ketanji Browns to the Supreme Court. And, affirmative action is back in place, and abortion and everything else is constitutional now. And there is no right to bear arms. And,
Freely.
Free speech is in the eye of the beholder. So,
well, not the beholder, just the Democrat beholder, the elite, basically.
The censor, that crazy lady that they had by the administration had. I don't remember her name, but yeah. But all those things could rapidly disappear, and then you know, what are we left with? It's really well, becomes you know, a totalitarian when Caesar, state.
When Caesar crossed the Rubicon in 30 BC, that was the end of the Roman Republic. It never came back. It just yeah. never came back. And eventually, 1,300 years later, the remnants in Byzantium fell, but Republic never came back. And 2024 is, I think, a Rubicon event, because I think
that's well, it is. And they, if America goes away, nature abhors a vacuum, and you've got the BRICS coalition. Mm-hmm. That's those countries are probably the majority of world GDP, and they're setting up their own reserve currency and transacting in gold-backed currencies, and they're building. You know, China and Russia have strong militaries. They're not promoting drag queen shows and inclusiveness. They're taking all this stuff seriously. And when push comes to shove, we've depleted our military, depleted our weapons, and I don't know what shape our military's in, because the priority is not to be a lethal fighting force. It's to know your gender pronouns and to have cross-dressing soldiers flying helicopters. That's not going to win wars when push comes to shove. We've depleted the strategic petroleum reserve. If we get into a hot war over Taiwan, we don't have a supply chain. We're not going to be able to supply fuel for ships. I mean, it's and yeah. China knows that. If I can see that, I'm sure China can.
Well, so, you know, Barack Obama was absolutely correct in his assessment. Don't underestimate how much Joe Biden can F things up. He really was right. He really was right.
Well, everyone's agreeing with it.
In fairness to Joe, how much of this is Joe's doing? I mean, is he really? He's in advanced dementia. He's acting inappropriately. He nibbled on some girl the other day.
Right.
You know, he's having these anger outbursts that if you've ever dealt with somebody in advanced stages of dementia, this is fairly typical behavior. And so they're the Obama administration people, Susan Rice, whatever, they're pulling the strings and Joe's just being told what to do.
I think so, too.
They know of all Joe's malfeasance. And
they don't
care. If Joe steps out of line, he'll be impeached, indicted, and sent to prison for all his crimes. So he has ample reason to behave and just do what he's told.
Uh-huh. Well, on that cheerful note.
In the meantime, in between time, it's wonderful to watch all these GOPE candidates just get totally
so we can take our humor where we can find it.
Well, yeah, the other candidates are non-serious candidates, and they're going to be whittled away one by one. Tucker's doing what Trump did in 2016 with the nicknames and the debates and all of that. But Tucker just culled the field. He knocked off three or four of them immediately.
Right.
When he does his next one, who's going to appear?
Right. They'll be busy.
Well, Chris Christie didn't show up, and you know,
Ron DeSantis
want to show up and take the heat. He'll have to explain his contradictions, and you know, all the money he's gotten from corporate interests, and good luck. Tucker can have a field day with him.
All right, hey, listen, Brian, we've taken enough of your time. Thank you for
you
that.
So
great column there, an American thinker.
Always a pleasure, and love talking with you guys.
All right.
Okay.
We'll see you
later. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Brian Dunde up there, you can see, I mean, if you go to American Thinker, he has a lot of great columns up there. And I know we had some great comments here from the people on Zoom too, about everything. Oh, and Cleo says, oh, damn, I was so looking forward to hear what Chris Christie has to think. Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because I think we do have to use humor, right? I mean, all is not lost. I think all is never all lost. And we have a lot of work to do, obviously. And I think, you know, everybody, you do what you can. And that's one of the reasons we're here, right? And I know that's one of the reasons people listen. It's like, you do what you can. And to a large extent, doing what you can is being aware and standing up and speaking up. And I think he's right, kind of fighting it with ridicule. So Chuck, on that note, you did watch all of the GOP interviews with Tucker Carlson. And you were just like laughing the whole weekend. It was the most cheerful I've seen you in a while. Why don't you give us your quick kind of rundown on it?
Well, it, as I've said before, it was done in such a friendly, nice, and with humor. And it was so devastating. I mean, to watch, you know, Tim Scott, and he was not mean to Tim Scott, but you see that Tim Scott's kind of a buffoon. I mean, he's got a great life story, but he's a buffoon. He's not a serious candidate, or shouldn't be. And then he executed Asa Hutchinson, who was really pretty good at just mouthing off and mouthing off and mouthing off. And then Tucker just caught him. I mean, he just said, right. Well, wait a minute. If you think it's treatment, you must be treatment for what? And for what would be transitioning from male to female or vice versa? So you assume that it is something good. And Hutchinson,
Well, you're right. And here's the thing again that we've missed is that's like a sort of a easy question, right? If you're actually listening and if you're paying attention and actually trying to get information out as opposed to just what
I don't think it's so easy because most people aren't able to do it. And there were at times I thought he was brilliant and is just boring in on you know, the wonderful bullshit answer that people gave. And then
Mike Pence.
Well, no, who's the woman? Haley.
Nikki Haley.
Nick Haley. And it was great. We said, well, who destroyed the pipeline, the Northern pipeline? He said, I don't know. I mean, an intelligent answer said, well, if you listen to Cy Hirsch, it was the United States military. If you listen to the New York Times, it was the Ukrainians who were anti-Putin Russians. But of course, no one believes the New York Times. It's a joke. And so it's clear that it will, but no, she said, oh, I don't know. You know,
Well, you're right. And then and she, like everyone else, doesn't seem very interested in getting to the truth. And then Mike Pence, everyone I'm sure has heard the Mike Pence when he's asking, going on and about Ukraine, and then says, well, what about all the trouble with the cities? And Mike Pence says, that's not my concern. And I'll concede that probably, you know, that Mike Pence, I'm sure, didn't intend to say that he doesn't care about American cities. But
what he said in his best form was that we can print money endlessly. We're the greatest power. So we can spend endless wars and endless money and then correct everything in the United States too by printing some more money. I mean, there's no more of a logical answer than his other one. It's not my concern, which was really, you got that feeling that
That Ukraine was his concern. Did. He was very concerned about Ukraine, but never concerned.
The Abrams and so tanks and everything else. And not only did he make a muddle of those answers, if you call a muddle, but he came across as priggish, unpleasant, and unlikable, which is a great combination to have.
Yeah, I've been a candidate. Yeah. Well, then we can play. So I do have some sound. So I didn't get that sound. But then Tucker, after he appeared at that family leadership forum in Iowa, where he did all of these interviews, he was at the Turning Point Action Conference, and sort of talked about what happened with Mike Pence. And again, and he was pretty funny on that. So Thomas, if we could please play the Tucker on Pence soundbite.
But if I could make some general observations, which I think are more edifying than just like savaging Mike Pence, I think, which I'm not going to do, because that would be wrong, and it would be wrong because it's too easy, and the easy things are not rewarding, are they? You don't feel good when you beat your five-year-old in soccer or ping pong, like what?
I think that's funny, and which is true. And here's the thing: it's like it's easy if people did their jobs. And I think what's good is, once again, it goes back to what kind of Brian Junta was saying: you can ridicule stuff, you can just point it out, right? I mean, that is one way we can fight back: it's just pointing that out. Mike Pence is another tool bag, basically, and he's used to being able to give these politically pat answers, and no one challenges him, and everyone goes, "Oh, we love Mike Pence because he was against the insurrection or whatever." What I mean? Instead. You know, he's like, when he's asked, do you care about the fact that our cities are in decay? He's like, oh, that's not my concern. It's like, bad answer. Do you think he recovers?
Republicans are inviting candidates to come out to Colorado when we have our state central committee one. What if Pence agrees to come? No!
Hopefully people will ask him. Yeah, maybe you can say, oh, sorry, we canceled it. It's like, but yeah, I think, but Dave is working on getting Vivek Ramaswamy and a lot of the candidates, right?
Awesome. Yeah.
some. Well, and I think that the hope there too of, you know, getting the attraction to some of the national campaigns, because that would be great if that could actually happen. Well, then Tucker also went on to say something kind of along the lines of what Brian Junedeck was saying, and that is how important, though, this election is because of what's at stake. If we could please play the Tucker on free speech soundbite.
One is punished for lying. People are only punished for telling the truth. You could literally wake up tomorrow, move to the Bahamas, start a fake cryptocurrency, defraud 1 million investors around the world of billions of dollars. I'm just saying you could do, and I'm not recommending it. Note to the FEC, not recommending it. But you could do that, and you can get caught. People might have like a balanced view of you. He's really smart, good guy. Got a little over his skis, as we say. But like, I'm not gonna hate on him, right? We all make mistakes. Like, who here, raise your hand if you haven't defrauded 1 million investors with a fake cryptocurrency. Okay, there are some. You cast the first stone then. Those kinds of crimes, which is to say actual crimes, like burning down buildings, impoverishing people, starting totally counterproductive wars we can't win that kill a lot of our citizens, leaving the border open so 7 million people can walk across. Those are not small things. It's not all like forgetting to fold your napkin correctly at Thanksgiving. Those are like actually kind of world historic crimes. Never punished. What are the crimes that are punished? Thought crimes. Thinking the wrong thing, having the wrong beliefs, saying unapproved words.
You know, and that's the real truth. And I think that's what Brian is right. I mean, they're going to, if they win, they're going to crack down on, you know, the thought crimes, you know, and your thought crime about actual crime is going to be cracked down on too.
Well, you know, what I love the fact, you know, and you think about it, you know, the cryptocurrency, everything else.
And but that was Sam Bankman-Fried or whatever his name is.
Yeah. But Trump is accused of what? Of taking some mementos with him from the White House?
Oh, yeah.
of giving some woman who extorted him some money. I mean, those are his crimes.
Right. Well, Chuck.
Calling people in Georgia and asking him that the vote wasn't right. I mean, it's just the minor stuff that Democrats can make into massive crimes, call to the Zelensky, whatever else they want. They just blow up everything. And then you have people like Bill Barr and others going, he's in serious trouble for that. Oh,
well, and that's because the underlying crime, of course, and that's why they're after us as much as Trump, is the thought crime, right? America first, the thought crime. And my concern is take that back. I did not say when, but if they win, they won't bother to have to cook up fake crimes like he took mementos. They'll just criminalize wrong thing. Right. They'll just criminalize. It's like, we don't even need a crime. You just, you know, you listen to the Chuck and Julie show. Therefore, we're going to cut off your financial services and things like that.
Yeah. As I said, you know, I went to Spain to school at the University of Salamanca in the late 60s. And there were a lot of people who 30 years before had been in the Spanish Civil War. And I described what was that like? He said, you know, you start off in the early 30s, everybody disagreeing and being, you know, annoyed and a few more. He says, you know, by 1937, on the other side, and both sides did it, you just round up the other side and take them to a bull ring and execute them. And that's what's going to happen to us. They're going to take us to a bull ring and execute us.
And Power Field, I guess, would have to.
Oh, well, yeah, that's right. Under the lights.
After the Taylor Swift thing. Well, then we have one more soundbite, and this is why. I mean, at this now, granted, a Turning Point Action conference, I'm sure, was largely Trump supporters to begin with. So they did a straw poll, and I don't think it would be considered scientific, but Trump easily won. What was interesting is Ramaswamy was not very far behind DeSantis, and everybody else was just like way low. But I think though, Steve Bannon spoke. And although I think Steve Bannon is kind of crazy, he's a good crazy, and he understands why the candidate has to be Trump. All of these things that people criticize Trump for, and like Brian Dunab said, Trump understands the corruption that he's up against now. Yes, he does now, and he understands that there is no hope if you let that go. So, Thomas, if we could please play the Bannon soundbite.
We don't have time for a diversion. We need to be focused right now on the election apparatuses in Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona, and to get behind Donald Trump and get serious about taking this country back. This is a crusade. This is a holy war against the deep state. Donald Trump is our instrument for retribution. I don't want to hear Glenn Youngkin in a vest. I don't want to hear Kemp with his George accent. I don't want to hear it. Donald Trump is our instrument for righteous indignation.
And I think that's right. I mean, Donald Trump, I mean, you listen to that speech. It was a fiery speech, but that's what he's saying. And I think what he's saying is, well, and it says something that these other people are in the race, right? Because they have the big money donors, and the big money donors don't like Trump. And that's what you got to wonder what Vivek Ramaswamy is doing too, because I like his ideas, but I have questions about him, and some of his history, you know, but what do you think about what Bannon said?
Well, I agree completely with what he said. I think we have to start right now. We don't want to see Glenn Youngkin, and they'll have to throw in a Kemp or a Glenn Youngkin just because all the other ones in DeSantis are dying. So they really got to keep our eyes off the ball, which is the rigging of the election in 2024. You know, the RNC, are they going to do anything about it? No.
Well, they don't want Trump.
No, they don't want Trump either. But this is now when you have to be getting your lawsuits and everything else to have any chance of their massive rigging. And the advantage to it is, you know, you don't have to do it in all the states. You know, you have to worry about Pennsylvania, you have to worry about Wisconsin, there's a half dozen states where you really have to do all the fighting you possibly can to have it be even a semi-fair election. But it has to be done now, and not while you're kind of going, oh, well, I don't know, I like Ramaswamy, but, you know. Yeah.
Right. You know, and you're absolutely right. This is kind of funny from Leo when I was saying, you know, you watch the Chuck and Julie show, you're throwing him in jail. He goes, that's why I never listen to the Chuck and Julie show. It's just psyop blasting over the speakers from my neighbors. That's all I have to say. Chuck and Julie, who never heard of them? But I think you're right. And that's where it is a distraction, and they do need to be, you know, I mean, essentially creating our own little Zuckerberg drop boxes and things like that to fight it where you can.
Right.
And now we've already seen with the courts, there's zero point trying to fight it after that.
Which is something we really learned that once you rig the election, the courts will do whatever they can to keep it rigged.
Right. Well, you know, and they've shown they're not going to get involved. And you can kind of, and not that I can understand that, but they're just not going to. So that's a false hope, right? And right. In the meantime, though, this kind of leads into, because we're running out of time now, but on Wednesday, we're going to have John Eastman on. He, of course, is one of Trump's lawyers who's being was persecuted and kicked out of CU. They're trying to disbar him, take away his law license in California for basically doing his job. And that's a trial. It's going on forever, and they're in a break now.
You know, it is interesting what the charge is moral turpitude.
Well, exactly.
Moral turpitude by suggesting a legal strategy where the election results would be delayed.
Right.
When a lawyer gets disbarred for recommending a legal theory that seems pretty, but nonetheless, he's going to go through August and all that. It's how sick our system has gotten.
Well, it goes to what I said. You know, they're going to quit worrying about actual crimes pretty quick here, and they're just going to go to actual, you know, thinking crimes. Yeah, and John Eastman has been totally, you know, he offered a legal theory, which was not even followed, right? Which they didn't, and in the end, they decided not to do. But that's all part of, what is it, that Project 65? It's a lawfare operation that basically targets any lawyers who try to give advice to Republicans and Republican candidates on issues like this. They want to make it so that, you know, no lawyer will take it. They'll disbar you. They fight to get your law. I mean, look at Jenna Ellis turned traitor, right? When they went after her here in Colorado. So we'll be talking to John Eastman on Wednesday as well. All right. Anything else? Oh, well, you know, new mayor of Denver. We'll have to talk about this too. Mike Johnston inaugurated today. I don't hold out much hope for.
What are you talking about? It's going to end all homelessness and solve all illegal immigrants and ever within 364 days now. So
that's right. He wants to do it in a year, right? Is that or something like that? All right. Hey guys. Well, and in the meantime, then too, I don't know that we'll watch, but the new Fox lineup starts tonight.
Same old Fox lineup.
Yeah, they just reshuffled
it. Jiggled around. So, you know, the new powerhouse, you know, Laura Ingraham starts them off. Woo, 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 woo.
They just flip flopped.
They don't have anybody new. They just moved him around. And now, you know, it's a brand new beginning for Fox.
That's like if we called it the Julie and Chuck show, and I sat over here and you sat over there, and we got a brand new show, brand new lineup. It's Julie and Chuck now. Hey, that's going to do it for us. Thank you to everybody. If you didn't have time, a lot of great comments there on Zoom.
Yeah, catch all everyone. Of thank all Brian of our Jude show. Depp.
Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank Brian June Depp, and thank our VBS co-conspirators.
There we go. Hey, everybody, have a great Monday. We will see you on Wednesday.